Hi, I'm Sam Broadfoot QC.
And I'm David Locke QC.
And welcome to the seventh in the series of podcasts concerning the law on police injury pensions, which, if some of you have been following since the start, aim to give an overview in bite-sized chunks of the legal scheme. If you have been following us through this marathon, and it feels like we have passed the 20-mile mark and the end is in sight, I need to repeat the normal caveat that these podcasts do not constitute individual legal advice to either pensioners or indeed the police force. If there are any issues which arise out of these podcasts for either individuals or the forces, both of us would be pleased to be instructed to provide personalised and confidential legal advice. Today we are going to explore how decisions about police pensions can be challenged in the courts and in the Police Medical Appeal Board, which I'll refer to as the PMAB. The vast majority of decisions by a chief constable or by the selected medical practitioner, the SMP, are made in accordance with the relevant set of regulations and are not subject to later challenge. As lawyers, we only get involved in the tiny minority of cases where there is legal challenge to the decision. But we need to bear in mind that this is the exception and not the rule. The vast, vast majority of decisions that affect police pensions follow the rules or are not subject to dispute and provide the correct amount of pension to a former police officer. Further, if mistakes are made, our experience is that these are almost always corrected quickly and by agreement between the force and the pensioner.
That's right. And there's another aspect of these disputes which needs to be noted. Chief constables are responsible for large amounts of public money and have a duty to spend that money in accordance with the rules of the statutory scheme. However, sometimes it's not clear to the force whether it ought to make a pension payment or not. That was the situation, for example, in Angie McLaughlin's case, which we discussed in an earlier podcast. In summary, Ms. McLaughlin was awarded a Band 1 injury pension in 1984, and that assessment was reconsidered in 2017 and quite rightly put up to a Band 4 award. And the position taken by the force was that it did not know whether it was obliged to pay Miss McLaughlin back pay of several hundred thousand pounds based on the Band 4 award as if it had been made in 1984. As a result, the force required Miss McLaughlin to go to court to establish her right to this sum, because the force did not genuinely know whether this was a proper use of public money or not. In effect, the court was being used by the force to clarify whether it was or was not required to pay Angie McLaughlin the money. Now, that's an entirely responsible approach for the force in the case involving a significant amount of money, or, perhaps this is more common, even if the amount of money is lower, the same decision is likely to arise in multiple cases.
That must be right, because as we have explored the complexities of the police pension system, there are many quite difficult decisions about precisely how the rules should be interpreted in any given factual situation. I can fully understand that a chief constable and those working for her need to be sure that there is a proper legal basis to pay out money before they do so. And indeed, that is why the courts, when these matters do get that far, take the cases very seriously. But let's start with the Police Medical Appeal Board, the PMAB. This is a statutory body whose members are appointed by the Secretary of State to hear appeals against decisions of the doctors appointed by the Chief Constable. In true pension podcast style, let's start with a bit of the background. David, what is the history behind the PMAB?
Well, the police pension system has always had a division between those decisions taken by the force, that's originally the police authority and now the chief constable, and decisions taken by doctors who are selected by the force. However, the doctor's selected by the force and is paid for by the force, and so there are limitations on the doctor's perceived independence. In order to counter this lack of independence, and indeed long before the European Convention of Human Rights was part of UK law, the 1987 Police Pensions Regulations provided that decisions by the SMP could be appealed to a medical referee appointed by the Secretary of State. And this was a single doctor who acted as an independent decision maker because he or she was wholly independent of the force. Now, there was a provision within the 1987 regulations for a panel of doctors to be appointed to fulfil the role of the medical referee, but it wasn't used very often. But in 2003, the regulations were changed so that the single referee was replaced with a panel of doctors. And that scheme was repeated in the IB regulations, which now govern injury pensions, and was also repeated in both the 2006 and 2015 police pensions regulations. Hence, strictly, the PMAB is constituted as a statutory body to hear appeals under four different sets of regulations. That is the 1987 police pensions regulations, the 2006 police pension regulations, 2015 police pensions regulations, and separately under the IB regulations.
One of the peculiarities of the scheme is that this is an appeal right which can be exercised by the officer, but not by the force, because all the regulations only give appeal rights to the individual rather than the chief constable as well. We will discuss this in the next podcast, where we'll talk about the likely changes to the pension schemes going forward. However, under the present arrangements, this is a one-way appeal right.
That's right. An officer who wishes to exercise his right of appeal against a decision of the SMP has to do so within 28 days of receiving the SMP report. A chief constable has a discretion to extend that time period, but could lawfully refuse to do so in the right case. And then once notice of appeal has been given, there is a set process for both parties to set out their cases. Then the board sets a date for the hearing and proceeds much like any other tribunal hearing, except that for the PMAB, the board always contains a specialist member whose areas of medical expertise fit with the relevant medical condition for the officer. The other members of the PMAB tend to be occupational health physicians who bring their wider occupational health expertise to the board. And the board process includes an examination by the specialist member, who then reports back to the remaining members of the panel.
And although we talk about this as being an appeal, it is not an appeal in the sense that lawyers sometimes understand the limitations on an appeal. It is, in fact, a complete rerun of the exercise carried out by the SMP, who applies exactly the same tests as the SMP. That means that the board can reach any conclusions which the SMP could have reached and is not bound by any conclusions or evidence reached by the SMP.
Yes, in fact, the independence of the board even goes slightly further, in that the Court of Appeal decided in a case called McGinty that the board had to take decisions on the degree of disablement of the officer at the date of the appeal hearing, not the date of retirement of the officer, or indeed the earlier date of the SMP decision. Now, whilst that might seem a somewhat academic point, it can have real consequences for the pension paid to the officer, because pensions are backdated to the date of retirement. The facts in McGinty were that the officer was initially assessed by the SMP to have a 45% degree of disablement when the pension first came to be awarded, and so she was awarded a Band 2 injury pension. She had a progressive condition, and she felt the assessment didn't properly reflect the true level of her disablement, so she appealed, in those days, to the medical referee. And there was a delay of about 1 year before she was seen by the medical referee. He decided that the former officer had, by then, a 55% degree of disablement, putting her in Band 3. But the medical referee said he didn't necessarily disagree with the SMP decision that she had a 45% degree of disablement 12 months previously, but he thought that her condition had progressed, and accordingly he felt that her current degree of disablement was higher than that the SMP had observed. The force then argued, entirely understandably, that she should get a Band 2 pension from the date of retirement until the date of the decision of the SMP, only to have her Band 3 pension payable from the date of the medical referee. But interestingly, the Court of Appeal disagreed, and they said she was entitled to the Band 3 payment from the date of retirement because that's what the scheme said. The court said that there was an element of swings and roundabouts operating here, which could operate in the force's favour or in the officer's favour, but that the medical referee, or now the PMAB, had to take decisions on the evidence at that date. And there's an interesting question as to whether the same approach should have been taken when a pension is reviewed, but we discussed that in relation to the Fisher case in the last podcast.
Yes. The board then produces its decision in a written report, which is then sent to all the parties. The regulations provide that the report is final, subject, of course, to the decision being quashed by way of judicial review. Next, we should look at the options available to a force when the force considers that the SNP has made the wrong decision. If the force disagrees with the decision on the merits, but the SNP has properly directed himself in law, there seems to be little that the force can do to change the decision. They may fundamentally disagree with the decision on the merits, but there is no merits appeal. Conversely, if the force considers that the SNP has made an error of law, the force is entitled to seek a judicial review of the decision.
That's right. An interesting question arose in relation to such a judicial review early this year, involving a former police officer, Brown. The force succeeded in persuading the judge to quash the PMAB decision, and then it argued the court should retake the decision for itself because there was only one lawful outcome that the PMAB could have reached. But the judge decided that the PMAB was not a, quote, tribunal, unquote, within the meaning of Section 31 of the Senior Courts Act, and therefore he decided the court had no power to substitute its decision for the decision of the PMAB, and so all it could do was quash the decision and ask the PMAB to consider the decision again. There are two points worth making here. First, although I argued in this case that the court had no power, I accept I argued the reverse in another case, albeit only on a paper hearing, and the court accepted that it did have the power, and therefore not only quashed the decision, but also directed that the officer was entitled to the pension. I think that was probably a pragmatic decision because the officer in question had a terminal condition and everybody wanted to get the matter clarified prior to his death. However, the right decision is probably the one reached by the court in the PC Brown case, that the court cannot take the decision itself and can only ask the PMAB to look at the matter again. Secondly, even in the Brown case, the judge decided he couldn't say there was only one decision available to the PMAB and therefore couldn't have reached a decision for himself on Mr. Brown's request for an injury pension, and therefore, in any event, the case needed to go back to the PMAB to be considered on its merits.
You give lawyers a bad name, David. If a force wishes to challenge the decision of the SNP or the PMAB, they are bound by the usual rules of the Civil Procedure Rules, Rule 54.5, namely that they are required to act promptly and, in any event, lodge the claim within 3 months of the date of the decision. So if a force does not act promptly, it will lose its right to challenge the decision in the courts. Now let us turn to a separate area, namely appeals by the officer to the Crown Court. Each set of police pension regulations describes the right for the officer to challenge some decisions of the Police Pension Authority by way of a Crown Court appeal. However, this right to challenge is limited by mandatory decisions that the PPA takes and does not extend to any discretionary decisions taken by the PPA.
That's right. If the wording of the relevant decision provides the PPA may do something, as opposed to shall do something, a challenge to the PPA's exercise of discretion can only be made by judicial review. It can't be made by a Crown Court appeal.
And the recent case of Carter against Chelmsford Crown Court and the Chief Constable of Essex said, it does not allow an aggrieved party to appeal to the Crown Court in relation to any decision by the Police Pension Authority. If that were the case, it would simply say so. And here they were referring to the relevant regulations. There are a few points to make about this case. I mean, firstly, I suppose the case is notable, not least because I think you were not in it, David.
That's right.
The Carter case involved a potential widow's allowance under the 1987 regulations. And I say potential because Mr. Carter was still alive, but the allegation was that the rule which excluded Mrs. Carter from obtaining a widow's pension because they had married after he retired rather than before was unfair. The Crown Court held that it had no jurisdiction to consider this point, i.e. that it did not have the power under the regulations to hear the appeal. So we should examine what specific decisions of the PPA can be challenged by way of a Crown Court appeal.
Well, under Regulation H5 of the 1987 Police Pensions Regulations, a Crown Court appeal can be lodged in respect of four separate decisions. First, the refusal of the pension authority to admit a claim to receive as of right an award. Secondly, the refusal to receive a larger award than granted. In that case, the assumption appears to be that the Police Pension Authority have agreed to some award, but not the full award. Thirdly, a decision of a Police Pension Authority as to whether to refuse to accept medical treatment is reasonable for the purpose of Regulation A12(1A). And we talked about that earlier. That's in relation to a case where an officer could have his medical condition improved if he underwent certain medical treatment, but then decided that he actually didn't want to accept the risks of it. And there's a reasonableness test there. And finally, a forfeiture decision under Regulation K5, which is where officers have their pension forfeited for having committed a very limited range of very serious criminal offences.
That's a very useful list and is interesting because, as we discussed in an earlier podcast, the question as to whether any refusal to accept medical treatment is reasonable or not appears to be a decision taken by the SNP on behalf of the Chief Constable and not a decision by the Chief Constable herself. However, the existence of an appeal to the Crown Court against this decision suggests that it may be a decision that should be taken by the Chief Constable. Can you throw any light on that issue?
No, not really. It seems a strange quirk of the regulations. But the decision whether it's reasonable for an officer to undertake medical treatment seems preeminently a decision for a doctor, as opposed to a decision for a non-doctor, such as a Chief Constable.
Yes. All of those cases can also be appealed under the 2006 regulations. However, decisions under Regulation 53 involving a reduction of an ill health or deferred pension where the officer brought about or substantially contributed to the disablement by his own default can also be the subject of a Crown Court appeal. Largely the same categories of cases arise under Regulation 207 of the 2015 regulations as well. I think you did a case, didn't you, in which the court had to consider the meaning of a larger award. Was that the case involving Mr. Kelly?
Yes, that's right. In broad terms, the court, in that case the High Court, decided that a larger award simply means a larger sum of money. So a pensioner who thinks he's been shortchanged by decisions of the Police Pension Authority is entitled to appeal to the Crown Court and ask for an order providing for the right amount of money to be paid. But Mr. Kelly's case is now listed for the Court of Appeal in early May 2021. So the law at the moment is a larger award effectively means a larger sum of money, but that of course may change if the Court of Appeal reaches a different decision.
Yes, I understand that case is raising actually a variety of interesting issues which we may discuss in our last episode next time. And just to go back to Mr. Carter's case, the matter was transferred to the High Court to proceed as a claim by way of judicial review. Do you know what the outcome was?
Yes, I think in the end the claim was dismissed because it was hypothetical. At that point, the court didn't know whether the problem identified by Mr. Carter would ever arise or not, and the court is not in the business of deciding hypothetical claims which may or may not ever arise. And so I don't think Mr. Carter got an outcome.
I see. Right, time limits. Is there a time limit for Crown Court appeals in respect of pension matters?
Well, there's no time limit in the police pension regulations themselves, but the Crown Court rules 1982 provide for a 21-day time limit for civil appeals going to the Crown Court, but the court also has a power to extend the time limit if it considers just to do so. So the primary time limit is 21 days, but there's a general right to extend if the court thinks it's appropriate.
And let's also not forget the pensions ombudsman as a potential route for remedy. The pension ombudsman exercises wide powers under the Pension Schemes Act 1993, and there are a number of reported decisions where police officers have complained to the ombudsman about decisions taken by the chief constable in her role as the PPA. When is this a good option for police officers who feel that the rules have not been properly operated in their case?
Well, this route has a number of advantages and disadvantages for police officers. First, complaints can be made within 3 years of the relevant decision, as opposed to a 3-month time limit for seeking judicial review. Secondly, this is a no-cost jurisdiction, therefore generally an officer is not at risk of having to pay the force's legal costs by making a complaint to the Ombudsman. And thirdly, the Ombudsman is a pension specialist, and therefore the appeal is made to somebody who is concerned with pension disputes all the time, as opposed to a High Court judge who may come across them only occasionally. The downside is that if the pension ombudsman rules against the officer, there are very limited grounds of appeal to the High Court to seek to review the decision of the pensions ombudsman.
And as we know, there are many reported decisions of the PPA or the PMAB where the challenge has been brought by way of judicial review. However, given that pensioners have the right to go to the ombudsman, it seems strange that no one has ever objected to the grant of permission on the ground that the Ombudsman is a suitable alternative remedy. Are you aware of that issue ever being raised, David?
No, it's a very interesting question, but the answer is no. I'm not aware of it ever being raised. There are a series of cases which have stressed that judicial review is a remedy of last resort and should be not exercised in cases where an alternative remedy is available. There's also clear case law that an appeal to the local government ombudsman is not an alternative remedy, but that may or may not apply by analogy in relation to the question of whether the pensions ombudsman is an alternative remedy. I don't think the issue has ever been raised.
That is interesting. I can see that there could be an argument both ways, but certainly experience has shown that in the case where a decision by the SNP, PMAB or the PPA does not have a well-defined route of appeal, the decision can be challenged by way of judicial review in the High Court, and certainly you have appeared in enough of them.
That's right. I've had the privilege to appear in a whole series of cases about police pensions. They're never easy, and they're always important, both for the pensioner and the force. But it seems to me there are many cases where the legal complexities are so great that whatever the expertise of the pensions ombudsman, it's difficult to see any real grounds for saying that the legal problems shouldn't be sorted out by the court. So I suspect there will continue to be a steady stream of judicial review applications around police pensions, unless these decisions are taken by the first-tier tribunal under a new form of regulations which haven't yet been laid. That's an issue which will be discussed in the next podcast. But for many pensions issues in other areas, decisions are made by the body, and then there's an appeal to the first-tier tribunal, as opposed to going straight to the High Court.
Thanks for that, David. Well, thank you very much for listening and for coming with us this far. As always, this podcast is accompanied by the relevant chapter, Chapter 7 of David's Guide, which is available free of charge on www.landmarkchambers.co.uk. Our heartfelt thanks go to Amy Jansen, who edits and produces this podcast. Hope to see you next time.